Welcome to Heroes Asylum, issue 31. We're feeling a little vertigo today. Just like the voices in my head, that's all I hear. Oh, welcome, folks, to Heroes Asylum.
I always have voices in my head. That's every day.
Welcome to Heroes Asylum, folks. Issue 31. It is, of course, Kane and I here, just like we do every week. We bring you the madness straight from the asylum. How you doing today, man?
Pretty good. How you doing, sir?
I'm not doing too bad. It's been an eventful weekend. Not eventful. I mean, it's actually kind of been blah weekend, but trying to make it sound better than it is.
Let's be real. It's been a blah weekend, but, yeah. You know, we have some good stuff coming.
That we do. Yes, sir.
We try to entertain.
That we do. Yeah, this week, like I was saying, we're feeling vertigo today. We are actually going to talk about Vertigo, the comic book run. I don't want to call them run, but the actual publisher, because it was announced about a month or so ago that they were going away, starting in 2020, being picked up, of course, by DC's Black Label. But we wanted to delve in, talk about what Vertigo is. Cause for us, especially growing up, you know, being comic book fans in the 90s, Vertigo was like the R-rated comic book, basically, you know. So we're going to cover that after we get done with the Asylum Ward. But first, I want to take a big thank out to everybody for subscribing and downloading. Thank you, guys. Numbers are looking great. We definitely have a big push going on in the Facebook realm. And I do see a lot more downloads coming. Pretty much we haven't gone overseas anymore, but that's okay. We're keeping it here at home. So that's pretty cool to see that. So thank you guys for checking us out.
Damn, Brits don't like us.
Maybe the Brits will like us after this issue.
Maybe. Hopefully we can get the Brits back on board. We love you guys. Seriously.
So we're gonna go ahead, and we're gonna go ahead and get started in the admissions ward.
News from the admissions ward.
All right, so we have a few things. It's been a quiet week again. We are leading up to the big D23 coming up this weekend, and we're gonna have a big episode for that one as well, folks. So stay tuned for that. But there are a few things out there. So we're going to go ahead and touch base. I'm going to go ahead and let Kane take this one over. So if you go right ahead, my friend.
Thank you, sir. Well, I'll start off the news this week with some sad notes, actually, because that kind of pisses me off. Sci-Fi decided to cancel Krypton and the long-developed Lobo series. After two seasons, Krypton was gone. Kind of sucks. I thought they were kind of hitting their stride. I never wanted the TV show about Krypton. But after watching for two seasons, they just gave you like so many nuggets, so many DC nuggets too, like of the bigger world out there. So it was like, you know, it's a show without Superman, but you have everything else in there. And if anybody got a chance to watch the season world, actually, it's a series finale. They hinted at a bigger DC world, Omega Symbol. And what I thought was the Furies actually was not the Furies. It was the Thanagarians. It was going to hit up for an awesome season 3, but it's kind of sad to see Krypton go, Mike. I know you were one of the guys that was kind of skeptical like I was at the beginning, but I thought they kind of hit their stride, you know, as the episodes went along.
Yeah, I think with me how it was. I mean, I'm the diehard Superman fan here on the show, guys. I've got ink on me with Superman, but just to me I was like Superman's grandfather who gives two Fs. But I actually, when I got to watch it, and especially some of the first things they did at the very beginning, you know, bringing in Adam Strange and showing Zod's family line, and just the changes that they were doing with, like, what, because we always thought it was the House of El was always this upstanding house, and showing that there was something more to it, and seeing a lot of the nods to, like, you know, Kane was just saying to the DC world was really cool. I think, honestly, nowadays, the streaming world and the DVR world kills a lot of good shows, because I bet you their numbers looked a lot different if you looked at streaming numbers than just the actual the actual.
Yeah, the Sci-Fi was showing the numbers how, like, the, you know, the viewership had dropped off from, like, the first season. Like, well, the first episode had 1.8 million viewers. I go, but that's always going to happen, especially with a new toy. You got a new toy, everybody wants to see it. But after a while, people dropped off, didn't really get invested in the story. But I thought it kind of picked up after there, you know. Like I said, I never wanted a Krypton series. But as it went along, I thought it got better and better. To be honest, I think the portrayal of General Zod, or Drew Zod, as he was called in the series, was actually really good, on par with Michael Shannon and probably Terrence Stamp Zod, because he was actually fleshed out more.
Right.
You understood where he came from, why he does the things that he does, and just made him more like he wasn't have like the superpowered Zod that we are used to seeing. He was more the tactician. He was more General Zod. You could see the tactician, the mind that he has. You know, there's a couple episodes that he somehow he got Doomsday, and he brainwashed Doomsday to work for him. I mean, just a lot of good things in that series. I just wish it didn't go away, but, you know, as you said before, the streaming is coming, and who knows? Maybe it could get picked up by DC or one of these other streaming services. You just never know.
Yeah, let's hope. I did read, I think I was reading another article kind of, and then there was a whole bunch of them out there talking about Krypton going away, but they were also talking about the showrunner for Lobo. That he's not killing that off just yet, because it was really never truly picked up. It was in the pre-production stages, and he's got hope to find somebody to pick it up. So cross our fingers. Hopefully, that at least will maybe get a Lobo series.
I hope it does. Would be great. Especially where it was leading to season 3. I mean, oh my god! There was one particular episode. I don't know if you saw it. I don't know if you caught up on it yet, but I believe one of Segel's friends, this is a girl that was basically promised to be his wife, and they were supposed to have this kid, and his name was Cortex. But after what happened to this girl's family, basically this family was the reason why the courts were dissolved. They were embarrassed. They were shamed. And at the end, you know, this girl basically tells Seg, like, look, I don't want to name him Cortex. I don't want him to have anything to do with my old family. And Seg is sitting there with his grandfather, like, what should we name him? And of course, the name comes up is Jor-El. And you hear that 1979 theme of John Williams just kick in. Just like little nods like that I'm going to miss. It's just like, oh, okay. They actually, there's a bigger world. It's kind of like interconnected in a strange type of way. So seeing Krypton gone is kind of sad. But, you know, like you said, let's cross our fingers and maybe somebody will pick it up. What do you got for us, Mike?
Well, actually, speaking of John Williams, good segue, by the way. We have news that composer John Williams, brother Don Williams, so not to be confused with Don Williams, has teased some details about the soundtrack for Star Wars: The Rise of Skywalker, saying that every theme that we have ever heard will be present in this final installment of the Skywalker saga. So I'm kind of interested. He was saying that they've done 4 days and it's just scratched the surface. You know, they've been in production for 4 days, getting all the music done. He thinks that they've got something like 34 minutes in the can at this point, but they're saying that they're expecting about 135 minutes worth of music to write.
That's a lot.
Yeah, so you figure 135 minutes. It kind of gives you an idea of maybe the runtime, too. I mean, obviously, there's not going to be music every second of the movie, but this still gives you kind of an idea of what that's going to be, you know, the length of the Rise of Skywalkers will be. So
I'm kind of 2.5 hours.
Yeah, well, that's what I would expect, is something of that, this magnitude of this scope, and they've usually hit that 2.5 hour mark.
That's a lot of themes to kick in there. I mean, you have like the older themes from the original trilogy, some of the prequel music. I mean, you're gonna have Duel of the Fates in there, I guess. Yeah,
in some way, shape, or form. Yeah, there was a note that the Duel of the Fates was going to be in there. It's almost sounding like it'll be sort of medley type music, where they'll maybe have a scene and it'll like incorporate. It'll transition from one theme to the next, to another, to another. So we'll definitely see. I'm kind of interested. I mean, this is John Williams' last score for the Star Wars series. He said he was going to be done after this one. And, I mean, there's nobody else I'd rather have scoring this than that gentleman, because I give George Lucas every credit in the world, but I don't think the movie would be as great without Williams' score behind it.
I agree. Williams' score is iconic. It actually, I mean, as good as the Star Wars lore is in all the movies, without that score, man, it just wouldn't feel the same. It just would be something just odd and different.
Yeah.
He's created great scores overall, but you know, John is basically part of this, is lynched and tied together with Star Wars, like hand in hand, and he has to be there. And to have him finishing out the entire Skywalker trilogy is just fitting.
Yeah. I mean, I couldn't hear Danny Elfman doing a Star Wars, you
know. Oh, could you imagine?
Yeah, the Duel of Fates would have a completely different. No, me too. I'm not taking anything away, but his style doesn't fit with Williams and with George Lucas and Star Wars. And I think that was just a partnership made in heaven, just that those two were there at the same time. And their careers just took off together. I mean, I know Williams had a career beforehand, but he became more iconic because of these scores.
I agree. I mean, you know, he's had like other ones since then, but you know, like we said, they're so interconnected together. Like I cannot imagine, like I could just sit there. And as I told you, I'm a big fan of scores and soundtracks, and I've been known to just like listen to a score on the way to work or on the way home. It's just like, especially a John Williams one, it just puts you in a different place. I mean, when you hear that score by John and Star Wars, you just feel like you're in there. You feel like, okay, I'm in this ship. I'm in this situation. And just, that's why I've always said, I think we've always agreed, is like music and movie, it's gotta fit like together. Because if it doesn't, like you said, if Danny Elfman was scoring, you know, Star Wars, it'd be ridiculous.
Yeah.
So it just, you have to have those things hand in hand, tying together. It just makes everything, you know, simpatico. So.
Yeah, I think I'm the same way. I've got Empire and Revenge of the Sith actually both on my phone, and sometimes at work, I just, when I need to just something other than music in my ear, I'll plug those in and just listen away. All right, so what do you have, sir?
Well, I got some news that actually dropped literally today because I wasn't going to have too much for the admissions board today, sadly, but. Netflix has announced they are doing a He-Man animated series, woo-hoo, and it's going to be done by Kevin Smith.
Awesome.
Now, before anybody gets a little, like, is it going to be a new series? Like, because they had a new He-Man series, I think it was called Masters of the Universe in the mid-2000s, which is really good. You guys should check it out.
Yeah, that was.
But no, this series is going to take place after the original series, which I think is fascinating. I mean, do we see an older He-Man? I mean, is Skeletor dead? I mean, does he have kids? I mean, there's like a lot of why. I mean, this is literally the first time we've actually talked about this. It literally dropped like, I think, an hour ago. So, your thoughts, Mike, on this?
I mean, I'd be happy to see, especially to see what you, because I mean, Kevin Smith being involved. I mean, he's one of us. Obviously, it's not gonna connect with the She-Ra series. Did you see the She-Ra series on Netflix?
I saw a couple episodes. It's good for what it was.
That was more the reimagining, rebooting of it. But I like the idea that this isn't going to pick up, or this is picking up where the series left off. Kind of reminiscent. Did you ever see the Thundercats series that came out about, I want to say, 5 years ago? And it was like a reimagining.
Yeah, I did. I
love that one. I thought that was great.
Did you? I think I had an issue with Lionel being so young. That was my whole thing, because you know, if you're gonna fight a guy like Mumra, you want to be at least of a decent age. And they, what was great about the original Thundercats is when Lionel was in, you know, sleep deprivation or one of those chambers, and he grew up, but he still had the body of an adult, but the mind of a kid. And literally in the new series, he didn't grow up with the body of an adult. He was still basically a kid fighting Mumra. That was one of the things that just kept bothering me.
Really?
It was probably just my taste, but
no, I enjoyed it. But I am looking forward to seeing Kevin Smith actually pick up into something that he's really wanted to get into. I know, I mean, growing up and us being all the same age, it's definitely something he's been influenced by. I don't think he's really had a chance to touch things other than in the comic book world, things that he's so passionate about. You know, he's done the run on Arrow. I think he's had another run. I'm trying to remember. There was another run he just did last year. We did a show about it about a couple months ago. But yeah, there was another comic book series that he was doing. But that's really all he's done to touch into that world.
I mean, like you said, he's all into the sweaty comic book stuff. But this is one of the things that I mean, it's great that he's on there, and I'm sure he's going to do his homework. But it's just like Kevin Smith and He-Man. This appearing, I never would have thought about. just kind of odd. But it's gonna, maybe it'll work. You know, who knows?
Maybe. Yeah, we'll have to see. For me, I have, it looks like Marvel is finally using their supernatural characters on the small screen. We know with the Disney streaming service coming out, they've also done a connection with Hulu doing the a package deal with Hulu and Disney, and of course ESPN is going to be on that. But it looks like they're going to be doing an Adventures into Fear series on Hulu some point next year on Marvel Television. It'll be starting off with Ghost Rider and Hellstrom, and it will be Ghost Rider from the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. So that'll be interesting. So they'll have two live action series jumping into that. But they're also going to be doing two more. So the big question right now is who will be those other ones? It's kind of where are they going to go? Are they going to do, Brother Voodoo or Werewolf by Night? Or finally, are we going to get that Moon Knight one that we've been dying for?
I think Moon Knight definitely has to be there. I mean, it's just like it screams for him to be there. I mean, I think the only appearance we've seen of Moon Knight in any kind of form was an animated. Well, I think he was in an episode of Avengers Assemble.
Yeah, I think so.
Where they were in Egypt and they showed him for I think he was there for a brief second and he interacted with Tony Stark. I believe that was during the Secret Wars or their version of the Secret War storyline. And it was kind of cool. And that's the only time we've actually seen Moon Knight. And to me, it kind of shocks me that we haven't seen anything of it. I mean, more rumors and innuendo than anything else. But, with them going to this type of horror type series, I mean, they're not going to do Blade. Obviously, their Blade is going to be for the big screen. But, Werewolf by Night, I think Frankenstein was part of that world too. There's some other ones. Damien Hellstrom is going to be kind of cool to see. Yeah. I don't know which version they're going to do of him. But, and Ghost Rider, sign me up. Let me see it. Go straight horror.
Yeah, I mean, DC's definitely thrown itself out there into the horror world a lot, a lot more. So I'm really happy to see that Marvel's going that route too.
They have a lot of properties they haven't touched yet, so it makes sense.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I was just going to say, it's like I'm not too familiar with any of their darker side things. I know Moon Knight. I know your Ghost Rider, your Damien Hellstrom. I know Blade. But the other ones I'm not too familiar with because, again, I think I've always gravitated more towards the DC dark world.
DC naturally is dark, so hey, yeah.
Why are you so dark, man?
But it'll be interesting to see where they're going with that. So I'm very fascinated. I mean, when is this going to come out? It's going to be on Hulu, correct?
Hulu. It'll be on Hulu. It'll be out at some point next year. They haven't given an official launch date because I know they're focusing all their energy and all their news primarily on the actual DC Plus or Disney Plus series. I keep getting those back and forth. Yeah. But the
DC Plus, that's DC Plus.
They're going to have the Disney Plus. I think they're putting all their time and their energy focused on that, especially with D23 coming up. Like we said earlier, I'm sure we're going to hear some news, maybe see a trailer or two for some of the shows, hopefully.
Maybe we'll get some of those. I'm trying to think. I think many, many moons ago, Marvel did one of their announcements for their movies, and they were filming Doctor Strange at the time, like literally filming like 2 weeks when they were doing this. I forgot. I think it was a D23 also, and they had what was called these concept drawings of Doctor Strange. Not a trailer, not any kind of real film. It was just a concept drawing. So I think. For this horror series, we may get some of that. Like, hey, this is what Damien Hellstrom's going to look like. Hey, we're going to show you maybe Moon Knight. Hey, Werewolf by Night's right here. Check this out. So I think you'll get the concept drawing more than anything else. I don't think you'll get like any kind of trade. Maybe casting, maybe, but I think you'll get more concept art.
Well, I think the casting, at least for Ghost Rider, I think was done because I think they were bringing the actor, the guy that did the Ghost Rider in
Ages. Diego Luna. Yep, Diego Luna.
That's so, right. And I mean, they were talking about Dr. Druid as well, possibly being on on that list. Yeah. My big question, though, I know this is Marvel. This is going to be Marvel Television. This is Jeff Loeb. He's in charge of this. Is Hulu going to cross that bridge into the Disney Plus? That's my big question because you're going to have a WandaVision, which kind of leads into Doctor Strange, from what we've been told. Are they gonna connect the streams, so to speak, or not?
I don't think so. I think it's going to be more like the Netflix world was. It was kind of like their own little thing. With like mentions, yeah. You know, like if you remember Daredevil, the big thing was they never mentioned like, oh, the Chitauri was always known as the Incident.
Yeah. The that's all it was. Something. Yeah. Like, I remember never, them talking that.
And they mentioned like a green guy. That's it. They just like slight mentions. So I think that's where the series of Hulu is going to go through. I don't think they're going to tie it, you know, directly like the Disney Plus stuff.
Hopefully, let's cross our fingers. Maybe they'll do more nods than what we got before. I know. At least with S.H.I.E.L.D., we got, you know, we had Lady Sith and Coulson, you know, jump into the world. So hopefully, maybe we'll see a little bit more than that. More of a tie-in than what we got on Netflix. So what do you have next? Or was that your last one?
Let's see. I only had two for this week.
Yeah, that's all I had.
I think you had the news.
Yeah, I did. Next one actually still falls under. We're still talking in the Disney world. Obi-Wan Kenobi series apparently has been finally secured. They are looking at doing a series, not a live action movie that we like we had a few years back. They were talking about doing an Obi-Wan movie. They were also talking about doing a Boba Fett movie. And I guess with the poor performance of Solo, a Star Wars movie. Or Star Wars story, they decided to pull the plugs on that, but have regrouped for Disney Plus. So I think we're still waiting on Ewan to sign. All of us out there, all the fans want him to be there. He wants to be there. He's even said it, you know, up front. It's just, I guess, we're just waiting to find out if negotiations can get worked out and schedule works out. So hopefully, we'll see that shortly. They have a lot to play with. Especially, I mean, I know a lot of people that aren't aware of it. There is a lot of books out there, comic books that do explain what he did. Not a full length. Hey, this is what happened when he dropped off Luke, and then hey, this is what happens when Luke finds him again. There's not a full story of that, but there's, you know, a week here, a month there. So we find out that a little bit of what he was doing. So hopefully this will fill in those gaps.
Yeah, small things here. I think Rebels had some stuff in there too. He had like a little arc with Maul. So I mean, you see some things out there, but I think with this, they'll be able to stretch it out and show you like, hey, you know, he wasn't just sitting in the desert being a hermit, like you know, sitting around waiting for Luke to grow up. You know, he actually had some stuff going on. So, yeah. You know, we'll see. I mean, I wonder if he's going to have another confrontation with Vader. That'd be interesting because. There was two lines, if you recall, the original OG Star Wars movies. And one of the lines was when Obi-Wan was in the swamps of Dagobah with Luke, and they were talking about Darth Vader. And basically Obi-Wan says, you know, he is more machine than man now. Like, was there another confrontation? Like, how does he know he was more machine than man? Like, how did he know he was alive? Was there like a meeting before the Death Star? Like
I don't think they'll go that. I think that comment was just simply he knows that he is more machine than man just because of his connection into the Force.
I mean, it's interesting because even Vader said in the same movie or in Empire, he's like, you know, Obi-Wan once thought as you did. I don't know. It's like little lines like that got me kind of curious that maybe there was another meeting. I mean, I don't think they'll do it. Because it's kind of like Vader's kind of oversaturated right now, but yeah. You know,
well, not
you know, we'll see. I think, just little nuggets, I think it'd be nice.
I just think it would ruin the one moment that they did have that one meeting of their redemption, that last scene of them and Mustafar, and then the next time they see each other as old men. I think that's a more fitting thing than instead of seeing them in the middle, you know, meeting somewhere when they're middle aged men.
I don't know. Maybe you get more flippy battles.
Yeah,
on the desert. I don't know, but
I think. But to me, I think one of the best battles there, fight or lightsaber scenes during that time when Obi-Wan was in Tatooine was that one scene with him and Maul because it shows you how precise Obi-Wan is and how quick and deadly he was because that battle with him and Maul didn't last long at all.
No, but I kind of like that. That lightsaber battle. People always crap on it.
All right, so the next one is... Actually, the last one, actually, will be for the news here. Peter Fonda had passed away this past week on August 16th. Failure from a respiratory failure from lung cancer. He was, if anybody knows who Peter Fonda is, son of Henry Fonda, brother of Jane Fonda. Movies galore. I mean, Dirty Mary, Crazy Larry, the Easy Rider for all of them, Cannonball Run for us 80s children, and of course, Ghost Rider for us sweaties. He did.
He played Mephisto, I believe.
Yeah. Yep.
Or no, was it Mephisto?
No, it was Mephistopheles or something. I can never pronounce the name because it's so.
Something like that. He was the devil, basically.
Yeah, basically, yeah. He was just the devil. Most people don't realize, I mean, back in the 60s, Fonda was not a conventional leading man. He was a Hollywood playboy. Also was in the counterculture. Took a lot of LSD on a regular basis. There were some stories. There were some stories with him on set having some LSD issues. And he's been very upfront about it. So, but no, I mean, he's Academy Award. Academy Award winning screenplays, nominations all over the place, Golden Globe. So, a great addition to Hollywood and everything he did for it. But, he will definitely be missed.
Yeah, one of the big giants leaves us again. You know, rest in peace and, thoughts and prayers out to his family.
Very good, folks. And that will do it for the Admissions Ward. All right. So here we are.
Righty, right.
Oh, like we were saying, about a couple of months ago, DC has announced that Vertigo, the mighty Vertigo, will be going away. They've kind of slowed down on some of the production, so it wasn't, I don't know, for me, it wasn't too much of a shock because I knew in the last year or so they've been drifting over to the Black Label. And there's been some really good, interesting books coming out of Black Label that I would always have assumed should go to Vertigo, but they didn't. But Vertigo as a book for us, I mean, when I was really, really delved into comic books heavy, Vertigo was actually launched back in 1993 in January. It was
a long time ago.
And it's funny is how Vertigo is thought of as a 90s comic book or in a 90s type of a publication, but it really started earlier than that. When you think of when Swamp Thing came out, you know, the original run with Swamp Thing, when Grant Morris redefined what Swamp Thing was, that's kind of the infancy of where Vertigo started. Actually started with Karen Berger, who was the lead editor on that. She actually started in DC Comics back in 1979. Started actually on your favorite book, one of the Batman books. But she was one of those people. Really? She wasn't a comic book fan, but she enjoyed the literary stories within them. So she kind of DC saw what she had, what she could do. And sent her over to England to meet up with some of these new wave of British artists and writers. I mean, and you and I both will agree, we're definitely influenced by a lot of them. When you think back of who came from there.
Tons of them, yeah.
I mean, you think you have
Alan Moore's the one of the big ones, yeah.
Yeah, Alan Moore, Neil Gaiman, Jamie Delano, Peter Mulligan, Grant Morrison, they all were British writers, British artists, and she kind of talked him into coming over and start writing for a big brand, because apparently, I guess the editors over in Britain were not very nice to their writers over there. So she went over there and became very close with these folks and brought them over. Like I said, so we did have January 1993, Vertigo started. It started off, and it's when we think of Vertigo, we think of Sandman, Hellblazer, Swamp Thing as like the initial ones. But it's funny is when you think of that, but Sandman was on number 47 when it launched in Vertigo. Hellblazer was on number 63. Swamp Thing was on 129. So
that's interesting. Those titles just carry over into Vertigo?
Just carried over, yeah. So you will never find a number one Sandman for Vertigo because it didn't start there. It started, you know, with DC. And then, of course, like I said, you know, you had Hellblazer. Animal Man was one of the first runs on started on Vertigo.
Animal Man. Wow. Jeez, I remember that one. I didn't like that comic at all.
You had Shade the Changing Man, Doom That's Patrol. Going back. Yeah, Doom Patrol came out. Actually, Doom Patrol started there with a new writer, Rachel Pollack, when it jumped over to Vertigo. So those were your initial runs on those in Vertigo. The very first comic book published under the Vertigo imprint, though, was Death. The series for Death was the High Cost of Living. So it's one of the very first ones to come out on that. And then, of course, you know, you continue on and you look at, you know, it had Why the Last Man, 100 Bullets, Fable, so many different ones. V for Vendetta, actually, was on Vertigo, but it didn't start on Vertigo. It started on Warrior Comics, which was a British run, and then Warriors went out of business. So they picked up the artist and brought him over to finish V for Vendetta and Vertigo. So that's why it holds that Vertigo feel.
Interesting. So, I didn't know about that.
Yeah, like I said, just like some really.
I knew about Warrior Comics. I didn't know that they went out of business. I mean,
yep.
That quickly. I know they were around for like a minute, and that was it.
Yeah, they didn't. They weren't around too long. They were around for enough for V to start up. You had a lot of these artists. These, you know, Neil Gaiman, Jamie, even Grant, all started with Warrior, and they kind of drifted them over to be with Vertigo. And again, Vertigo, most people think, you know, okay, it was just a book, but it was actually, Vertigo was the starter of the graphic novels as well, that they would get these artists together and say, you know, we don't know if this would be a good month-to-month run, but the whole story, let's pile it in and release it in one book. So that was where a lot of our, you know, a lot of your graphic novels are, you know, will originate from as well. So it's not that we're just losing an imprint or a series or a book series coming out. We're losing a lot of history with this. So that's why. So Kane and I are going to kind of run over our favorite runs for Vertigo that I know influenced me, influenced you. So what do you? So
yeah,
what,
I got,
what was
I,
your first?
I
first
got.
Vertigo?
My first one, wow. I guess this is one that kind of like carried over into the Hellblazer form, and that was Constantine. You know, everybody knows about the movie with Keanu Reeves, and then you guys, if you check out the CW or the NBC show with Matt Ryan, he's kind of picked up that mantle and kind of made, you know, I think kind of made Constantine, but, you know, people don't remember that Constantine started on a comic book, you know. And if you don't know who he is, he's basically like this British occult type of detective. I will say demonologist more than anything else. Quick-witted, sharp tongue. Basically, when he was created by, I don't have it in front of me, but when he was created, he was basically created as a guy who knows everybody. Almost like a politician type of person. You know, he knows any bar or any place he walks into. John, you know, hey, I know. Almost like Norm from Cheers, but he fights demons. And, you know, he does hang out in the occasional pub too and has a pint. That's his thing. And he's been all over, especially Hellblazer, especially Vertigo. He's been one of those, I won't say forefront guys, but, you know, when you think of Vertigo, I definitely attach Constantine to that and a lot of the great stories, basically what he is, what he does. I mean, he was actually one of the charter members of the Justice League Dark, you know, I think he was almost like the Batman type of figure in the Justice League Dark because he was always on the outside, never a team player. That's why I always kind of dug him. And powerful in the occult, that's his big thing. He could basically fight any demon one-on-one, or a big demon, or bigger, the devil himself, and he could just talk his way out of it. He knows every almost kind of incantation, magical spell. And he's one of my favorites. Mike, what do you think about Constantine?
He is also one of my favorites from Vertigo. It was Alan Moore actually is who introduced him while he was writing Swamp.
Yeah, I had it. I can't believe I forgot.
I know. Yeah, I know it was right on the tip of your tongue too.
I know. I was like, Jesus. I was like, it was a tip of my tongue. Like, I know it's him.
He started on Swamp Thing. It was really Alan wanted Sting to be in a comic book, and that's kind of where Constantine started, because he originally started as just a background person, wasn't even involved in the storyline. Then eventually they say, I think they said his first appearance is like June 1985 in Swamp Thing. But actually,
Swamp Thing 37, I believe. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. But they were saying that he actually debuted a little bit sooner than that because they had his character in the background of a lot of these in Swamp Thing. So they're saying he was actually closer to 84 when he debuted. But yeah, he was one of my favorite ones. Just a snarkiness. He's a punk. I mean, he is straight up a punk rocker. If anybody's into, you know, heavy metal punk, that Constantine's your guy. Just because of his,
I believe attitude. He had a band too in one of the interviews in his earlier days. He had a rock band. Yep. So
it kind of, you know, lends itself to that Sting vibe anyways. But yeah, he was one of my favorite ones, and he was actually my gateway into going into Vertigo.
Me too. That was the beginning point for me as well. I was like, who's this? And then I started discovering other people. I mean, you know, like Beast Man or whatever, the Animal Man. Animal Man, man, it's a little comic. I wish I could have taken back. But yes, Animal Man, a couple others, 100 Bullets, and some other ones, V for Vendetta. But he was like that entry point for me. And it's good to see that he's still relevant nowadays, especially with TV. If anybody got a chance to see that movie with Keanu Reeves, which I think is very underrated, by the way. People have issues with it, but, you know, I kind of look at it from a different perspective as a movie, as a standalone. You know, obviously they just took the name Constantine and then did their own thing. But the movie, for what it is, you know, it's pretty good. So my starting point with Constantine was those, of course, the movies, the comics. I mean, he's had some great runs with that, which I guess we'll discuss later on. But he is definitely the first and foremost for me entering that Vertigo universe.
Yeah, definitely. And again, also, he was the intro for me to the magical world of DC. You know, most people, we don't see it. We hear it of Zatanna, Swamp Thing, but like our actual like delving into dealing with demons and dealing with the books and everything. So he's one of those ones to check out. There is, if you guys are interested, I mean, you can go in and check out the Vertigo runs, but they are starting again, Vertigo going away, Black Label is starting. John will be actually on starting a new run on Black Label. So I'll be interesting to...
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh,
okay. Yeah, they're going to start a pickup. I just announced it last week, I think, of them starting off a new run for that. So it'll be interesting to see that. But go out, check out some of those earlier runs. I think for me, my favorite is Original Sins, and of course that's the intro to him. So for me,
not that one. So what do you got, Mike?
Oh, so for me, the one I've actually I just read this week. Honestly, it's going to be on a pick for me. Is Death, and I know we're going to talk about the connection to death in Kane's got that one for us, but for Sandman, but Death is, she is what they call the Endless, part of the Endless, a family of entities. I don't want to call them spirits, but the entities that exist in the Sandman world. And she is basically that death. She goes to people, takes her soul. But in the run I read, it was just kind of like pretty much any movie or any book you probably have ever read about death. She comes down every, like, you know, 100 years to be a human. And it's just her interaction with these characters that she has a heart. But she's still, you know, assigned to her lot in life and to have to follow through with everything that, you know, death has to do. The look of death was, I think, probably one of the most striking things to me. When you think of comic book characters, you think of superheroes, the big one, you know, the big strong muscles, the you know, voluptuous women. Death is in every aspect a waif goth girl, very skinny, very pale, black hair, black leather pants. From best I could tell, like, I don't know if they were really leather, but for, you know, I guess in my head when I was looking at them, they looked leather.
Vinyl. We could say vinyl.
Or leather. Let's go. That's, yeah. for you PETA folks, we'll call it vinyl. And but hey, she was but like she was just as goth goddess, really. When I read it, I was like, man, she is just a very beautiful woman. She's portrayed as a 16-year-old girl, but that's just the body that death has taken at this point. But it's the body in the look that you see Death in throughout the rest of the comic book series. And because, I mean, the Death run is a very short run. I think it was only three books. And that was for the Vertigo run, the first run that they did for her.
Yeah, I believe so, yeah. Because I think that they were trying to make standalones of all those of the endless characters, like Destiny, Death, Desire, right. Despair, Delirium, Destruction. And I think Death had the longest run out of all those. I'm not too sure about that.
Well, I know her first run, Death, the High Cost of Living. That's only a 3-issue series. Again, another Neil Gaiman, you know, gem. If nobody knows Neil Gaiman, take yourself out from under the rock, because he is everywhere. He is in novels and comic books,
literally everywhere.
Death was definitely one I really enjoyed from Vertigo. Like I said, she just her look and how she interacts with people and just her outlook in life was refreshing for me.
Well, most of those characters, I believe Death, you know, tied to the Endless, they all kind of look very similar, very goth style, like, you know, Sandman or Morpheus. He had that Robert Smith type of look with his hair pooped out, and sort of like most of the other of the Endless, they were like very goth looking. I think that's what Gaiman's idea of like these entities were, you know. And coming from Britain, I mean, that's, you know, that's where The Cure was from. So it's kind of interesting to see that music once again an influence on comics and something like this. That's how I always saw like the Endless. They were kind of like this cool group of goth kids, or, you know, just hanging out and making choices. And, you know, with Death, I never got into that particular character. I only saw her as a, you know, a side person with Sandman. But you know, if the comic book is run, I'll have to definitely check that one out.
Yeah, no, it was definitely fun. But I mean, if you actually look at some of the other ones, if you look at Delirium and Despair. Sorry, I was reading that right. Yeah, they're not all gothy. You have, you know, you have one character that's a blind man. And you have one that's a kind of a naked sumo looking wrestler one. So yeah, there's some different interesting looks on the Endless. So if you just check them out, I know Dream and Death were their biggest ones. So that really took off and had their own runs.
I hope eventually in the Netflix series that's coming, you know, hopefully we'll see.
That would be,
I think,
awesome.
We'll see Death again.
We should. Yeah, she could.
I think you're, yeah.
Because her and, yeah, her and, the, her and the Dream, Endless,
they were pretty close. They had a lot of dialogue in the Sandman books. So if they're going to throw them in there, they should. I mean, I don't see why not. I mean, they're a big part of the story, so, and of Morpheus. So, I mean, I can't wait. To be interesting. Especially with Sandman. Sandman is one of those big books out there that is just... you've read Sandman. Sandman is like... Morpheus, the character himself, is just so strange and so weird that it goes off on so many different tangents as far as like stories go. I thought it was always fascinating to me, reading the Sandman books. They were always deep dives, and that led me to other deep dives like Lucifer, which is one of my favorites from Vertigo. But Sandman is definitely the one that's going to be, I think, to me, it's a very dense type of book. Because he's kind of like, I've always told you, he's a dense character to me. Because, like, it's not normally about him. I mean, I think the first issue with Sandman, if I recall correctly, he was captured by this old man and group, and they basically held him. And the world of dreams was, you know, basically still at bay because he's not there. And eventually, when Morpheus did escape from this old man and this kid, the punishment for the old man was basically living his entire life in his worst nightmares for the rest of his life. So when it got down to it, Morpheus definitely had a, you know, he had an edge to him. But and then he just have a lot of like weird offspring stories coming from the Sandman. It's just not about only about Morpheus; it's about other stuff. So I always found that kind of interesting.
Yeah, I thought one of the cool ones is that Gaiman was a big fan of the early Golden Age DC characters, and hence the Sandman. Mm-hmm. That's one of the, you know, that was one of the reasons why he took the name. Because he liked the Sandman from Justice Society, but he couldn't touch him because at the time when he started writing the books and wanted to do this, they were still tied up in the Justice Society. of America. So they couldn't, he couldn't touch him. So he just went ahead and just created, like you were saying, this Robert Smith looking, you know, Peter Murphy kind of style. But I thought it was cool is that, that what you, when you were referencing the old man and the kid that took him, they tied that in and somehow Neil got his way anyways. They tied it into that. That is why those Sandman existed. Because during the time
that
Morpheus was locked
yeah.
up, that those Sandmen were able to exist. So and they were still, even though Vertigo is such a dark and in depth world, you would think it wouldn't connect with that light side of DC. They still somehow found it a way and made it not cheesy either. That's when I first started getting that connection when I read it, I was like, is this gonna be lame or what? And I really enjoyed how they made that connection, but still were like, oh, no, those guys can still go do their own thing. But this is me. I'm the real one.
I did like the fact that he connected the old Sandman in there. That was kind of cool. You saw the Golden Age Sandman and the other type of Sandman. And then he's part of this world. Because this Sandman that I created, he's the main guy. And I was like you said, he always got his way, didn't he, Mr.
Yeah, Gale he did somehow. I mean, and I would have loved to have seen him do a straight up old school Sandman run. When I was doing the research on this, I didn't realize he was such a big fan of the original Sandman. Because I mean, to me, it was
neither did I. Because I thought he just created this Sandman from the head, but apparently he still has love for that old.
Yeah,
Sandman.
He did. That's why. And I was like, really, Sandman? I was like, I mean, out of that group, he was the Guy Gardner, and I'm gonna bust my own balls when I say this because I'm a big Guy Gardner fan. But he's the Guy Gardner of the group. He was just like there. It was like okay. So, but yeah, that's
basically. I don't know if you compare things to God, but you know, that's on you,
yeah,
sir.
What about?
I will show you a tear and a handful of dust.
Were you a fan were you a fan when Morpheus went ahead and went away and Daniel stepped in? Do you remember that run? No,
not at all. No, I do remember. I was not a fan of that. I just didn't like it.
I know.
I thought that was one of those. It was very short.
Yeah.
But I did not like it at all. I was just like, no. You know what it reminded me of? You know, if you guys have watched TV in the 80s, Captain Mike and I have, I was a big fan of the Dukes of Hazzard. He had Bo and Luke Duke, right? Then for some reason, they had contract negotiations, and the original actors weren't there. And all of a sudden, who comes in? Cousin Cletus and Cousin Larry or something like that for like a season. Yeah. You're like, who the hell are these guys? They're driving the General Lee. And they're like, oh, they're these other cousins. That's what kind of Danny reminded me of. Oh, that's not the Sandman.
Yeah.
Who's this dude? So I was never a fan of that.
I've always wondered.
So I only ever. Not one of those fans.
All right. Got you so angry you pulled out a Dukes of Hazzard reference. That's. Wow.
If anybody can name the other cousins of Bone Luke Duke. Please post it on the Facebook page.
Yeah, let's not. We don't. They were there and gone for a reason. Yeah. So, so for me, I actually got a chance to read this. I had never picked up the book before. I picked up The Kitchen. You know, this week or last week, actually. I'm sorry. The movie came out. The new movie came out, and I was like, really, Vertigo, and I had remembered seeing something in the comic book stores of The Kitchen, but never really thought too much about it because, again, I was more that geared towards superheroes, and that really reminded me more of a gangster kind of feel, and I was like, a gangster comic book never kind of vibed with me, but I picked it up, and I have to tell you, it was very impressive. It's just circles around these three white ladies that their husbands get locked up, and it literally jumps like right in that their husbands are locked up. Their husbands obviously are mafia guys. One's just like a low level lieutenant, you know, just does pickups for, you know, for cash, and but they had a group of, you know, people, you know, working with them. And they had certain areas that they had to go and pick up, you know, their payments, you know, for protection. And one of the girls is just going around doing her pickups, and then stops by, and the other one is one of their one two of them were sisters. I think it was Raven and Kathy were sisters in the book, and then there was another girl, and I wish I could remember her name off the top of my head. Ruby, and they were, and you know, Kathy asked, you know, Raven, hey, are you picking up your money for your husband? And she's like, no. And that's when they're like, somebody needs to, and you're not making any money doing this. So then they just start building up a small gang, basically, and start manipulating their way through it, through New York. And again, this is during the 70s. So it definitely has some grit to it, some heavy gore, but I was very, very impressed with this and in the direction it went, and the storyline of what these characters
I'm almost curious, you know, since you said it's in the 70s in New York, and that's the era of the New York City blackout, I think, what was going on during then. I think, was it just during the Son of Sam? Or Son of Sam was early 80s, probably.
So that era of New York, but it actually took place during the blackout. It's funny that you mentioned that, it did take place during the blackout, because one of their problems has to be handled during the blackout, and they hint to that the blackout was actually caused by that. Yeah, the blackout happened because they had to go take care of this little problem they had.
But yeah, I was just kind of curious. That was one of the bigger things going on there. So them including the blackout is kind of cool, you know, just incorporating what's going on in, you know, in the real life with the comics. So it's interesting.
Yeah, and like I said, I was very impressed. I didn't think much of it. I saw, you know, I was at the movies and I saw them do an ad for it. I'm like, Vertigo, really? Okay. And then this popped up and I had to check it out. And I got to tell you guys, I haven't seen the movie yet, so I can't say anything about, you know, how I feel about the movie. But what I saw, what I read on the book, and I'm a mafia fan. I can probably watch, you know, Casino, Godfather, and Goodfellas, you know, all weekend and every weekend for the rest of my life. I love those movies. And this one definitely had that feel to it and captured that time as well. And so I'm looking forward to going to check out the movie. So I definitely will throw in a review of the movie when I do see it.
Well, I definitely want to pick up The Kitchen now after that, you know, that great endorsement that you did right there. So
It's only eight issues, I think. And so they're pretty quick and easy reads too. I was surprised. I was worried when I started getting into it. I was like, all right, I'm gonna have to keep track of them, their husbands, their muscle guys, their kids. I'm like, man, this is gonna be a lot of people to like try to like wrap my head around. But it really wasn't. They made it really easy. I think there was like one time I got a little confused about what dude was who, and you know what chick was banging what dude, and that was like about it. And then, but I picked it up a couple of pages later. Yeah, there's a couple, two guys that kind of looked the same. Like when the guys were drawing them, two guys kind of looked the same, and they both kind of had the Jimmy Johnny name. So it just got that one. I was like, oh crap, which one's that? Oh, okay, got it. And then after that, I was fine. So it's not too hard of a read. And like I said, very quick and easy. I was able to get through the run within a few days.
How many issues in that run, Kevin?
I guess I thought it was eight. It's not a long run, and it's one of those ones that they did actually, instead of releasing as a full graphic novel, they did just release each issue one at a time.
Well, you know, stories like that, you know, that have like a limited shelf life always turn out to be decent movies. So now that you've told me about The Kitchen, now actually I want to check it out now, especially like you said, mob movies.
Yeah,
that's kind of one of my guilty pleasures as well. So.
Yeah, you owe me both. I'm kind of interested to see. I'm reading over this. Like, it may have changed up some of the names of certain people on here, like some of the characters. So we'll see. But I definitely will give you guys a review when I get a chance to run out. I can actually go see a comic book gangster movie. So win-win is how I look at it.
Yeah, definitely, Captain Mike. Definitely. So I guess it's my turn. The other thing I have for Vertigo, and it's probably one of my favorite comic books ever, and that's saying something being a big Batman fan, is a book called 100 Bullets. Mike, I don't know if you read it, but I'm going to give you a little synopsis of the book, and maybe you guys, our listeners, will check it out too. 100 Bullets is basically about a briefcase and a gun and a couple pictures in there. Now, basically, this Agent Graves gives out a briefcase with 100 untraceable bullets to people who have basically ruined your life. Agent Graves will find you. Let's just say you're on a bus stop. Hey, how you doing, Captain Mike? You good? Sure. Hey, this is for you. What is it? Briefcase. Full of a gun, 100 untraceable bullets, the picture of the guy who ruined your life, and the files of how he did it. So basically, you have carte blanche to do anything. No law enforcement can touch you. No government agency can touch you. You have free reign to do whatever you want. And the big thing about 100 Bullets is the moral dilemma of what do you do? You basically have a carte blanche to kill anybody you want. And it dives deep, many issues. Couple stories is Dizzy Cordova. Dizzy Cordova is a Latin American girl who basically her family died in a car crash. But when Agent Grace finds Dizzy, Agent Grace lets Dizzy know, hey, you know what? No, they didn't die in a car crash. This guy did. And gives her the briefcase. Lewis Hughes, an ex-con who lives in the ghetto, had issues with his father. His father basically ruined his life. Agent Graves, hey, how you doing, Lewis? I have this briefcase for you. And they go on from there. And there's tons of stories that evolve with Agent Graves handing out this briefcase to these people who basically have their lives turned upside down. Hey, this guy ruined your life, but I can fix it for you. Well, that's not all. They also incorporate things of American history. There's also an issue with, yes, Joe DiMaggio and John F. Kennedy. And Agent Graves gives the briefcase to Joe DiMaggio, basically saying, hey, the same spiel, untraceable bullets, and you can kill John F. Kennedy. Why? Because you killed Marilyn Monroe. That's one of the stories also. And they have many little stories, but that's not all. There's also a main threadline story, which involves Agent Graves, and he's in charge of this police squad called the Minutemen. Now, the Minutemen are basically the seven of the deadliest assassins in the world. Untouchable. Just think of seven John Wicks, right? And Agent Graves is in control of them. Why? Because basically the world government is controlled by something called the Trust, run by 13 families. Now, the Trust is in charge of the U.S. presidency. They're basically in charge of everything. They have their hands and pickle and everything. Now, the job of the Minutemen is basically to keep these 13 members of the Trust in line. But the through line of the whole story is the Trust wants to get rid of the Minutemen and get rid of Agent Graves. Now, Agent Graves, best beknownst to the Trust, has laid out these seven assassins around the world, basically brainwashed them to the point where they don't remember they're part of the Minutemen. And there's a special saying later on that Agent Graves will go up to these unknown people who they don't even know they're part of this Minutemen crew. They'll say a certain, you know, phrase. They'll snap out of it and become some of the deadliest killers in the entire world. The world organization of 13 families, basically, like I've said before, they control everything, but they want to get rid of the Minutemen because they don't want to be interfered with anything in the world. So Agent Graves is in charge of this, and we go from there with those storylines of, you know, certain people getting this briefcase, but the main storyline being the Trust wants to get rid of the Minutemen, and Agent Graves is in charge of this whole thing. And that, my friends, is one of my favorite comic books. Little synopsis of 100 Bullets.
Wow, that would actually got to check that one out. That actually sounds pretty good.
It's really good. I mean, I don't know if you've heard it, but, you know, besides this day when I actually, you know, introduced it, but it's one of my favorite books. And they talked for a long time of doing this as a movie. I think Tom Hardy was attached to it for a long time. I think this is a series that is best served on streaming because you're gonna have like, you know, you have that main arcing storyline. But you can do like, you know, almost like a Incredible Hulk thing week by week. Hey, guess what? Agent Graves is going to pop into your house. Why? Oh, you've been wrong. Oh, you got fired from your job? I'll show you why. He gives out that briefcase. And the whole moral dilemma of the whole thing is what fascinates me. If you're a big fan of like a movie like Reservoir Dogs, when you read it, you'll see the art style very similar to that. The John Wick movie right up there as well. Anything like, you know, as you said before, gangster movies like Casino or Goodfellas, you know, it's right along those lines. And definitely you could see this fitting in there very nicely.
Very good. Yeah, it's definitely one to add into that.
Is 100 Bullets.
Very good. So so for you guys.
That's probably my favorite from Vertigo.
Yeah, sounds like it. I mean, knowing you, that sounds like a book because I know you're a massive Wick fan. Yeah, and that would. That definitely sounds like something that you would enjoy. I'll have to definitely check those out. Is there any like specific series on that one, or just the whole series? Because I know it ran for about like a decade.
It's the whole series. It's basically the same through line that I talked about with the Trust and the Minutemen. and those little small arcs with Dizzy, they have like different people who actually get the briefcase here and there. And it's almost the same moral dilemmas like I've said before. It's just like, hey, you have this briefcase. This is the guy who screwed up your life. I mean, it's just that whole thing. Like, hey, should I do it? I can get away with it. Nobody will ever know. And nobody will ever know. Because Agent Graves is in charge of these organizations. That, you know, hey, if somebody were to say, well, hey, well, this guy's dead, you know, the first phone call that's going to come to is going to go to Agent Graves. Oh, this is about this guy. He had nothing to do with it. So anything you do or you think you might get caught, you'll never get caught because this guy's in charge of the whole thing. So I think that's what makes me a big fan of that. And it's very similar to John Wick and his underworld, almost there. But it's definitely like one of my favorite reads of the last, like, probably 20 years.
Very good. So with Vertigo, guys, there is so much. I mean, we could be here for hours upon hours to talk about it. For anybody that's interested in it, get out there, check out some of the runs that are out there. Pick up the ones that we've talked about. I know a lot of them are, you know, I know like Death is a quick run. The Kitchen's a quick run. John Constantine, Hellblazer, that's a deeper one. So is Sandman. But you have so many other ones out there. You've got Preacher. You have the Fable. If anybody's a fan of Grimm from the, I think it's the NBC TV series. Very similar to that. Not, and it's not based off of Fable, but it's that idea of, you know, your nursery rhyme characters, but being put into a different world. iZombie that's out there on television right now. Lucifer, you know, again, Kane definitely speaks of Lucifer highly. So he's one of our probably our bigger ones on our reading polls, you know, every week. Swamp Thing. Anybody watch the Swamp Thing series on DC streaming? Yeah, we beat that one to death, I think. And
I think we did.
And also one that we didn't cover, Why the Last Man. Another great series. So if anybody wants to get out there, they're still out there. A lot of these will be drifting over into the Black Label. Right now, Black Label is a lot of bigger name characters, the Supermans, the Batmans, Jokers. But a lot of these books are still out there, and they're going to be transferring over. So check any of those out. And like I said, the series that Vertigo has and the titles are just unbelievable. And they're still making them. They just released, they just started a new series on Lucifer, didn't they? Wasn't a new run that they were starting this? No, sorry, Sandman. I take that back.
Yes.
Sandman.
Sandman and there's another one too. I believe it's called Dream.
Yeah.
That's another one they just released on Vertigo. That's the one I'm going to have to tackle next after Lucifer. If Lucifer ever ends, because it just keeps going and going. But so far I've liked the run.
So even though, you know, Vertigo is changing names, they will be going over to that Black Label. So check those out. Like I said, even though Sandman just started, and this is a good time to pick up, especially before it runs over to Black. And everything I've read, it will continue, so don't worry about it. But again, check out TV and movies. Vertigo is out there bigger sometimes than a lot of the other ones. If you really look at what's out there,
I would agree.
I mean, if you narrowed it down, if you actually narrowed it down and looked at what is out there for DC, I bet you most of that is actually Vertigo.
I would have to say so.
I mean,
because still a lot of those storylines are very dark and edgy, and then definitely the Vertigo. I mean, like I said, we've said a couple things here, but there's, like you said, there's a story called The Clean, which is another good story. There's a story about Greek gods like living in modern London. I forgot the title of that one. That's another Vertigo line right there. It's just so many good stuff, and I think all of those you said they're all being transferred to that Black Label, correct?
As long as they're running right now, yes, they're all being transferred. Even like I said, the Sandman just started now. That's being transferred.
Well, some of these might have ended. Okay.
Yeah, some of them have ended. There's been quite a bit that they have had that have ended, but still get out there and check those out. I think Vertigo is the cure for what a lot of people are saying is the oversaturation of the superhero movies and the superhero TV shows. Vertigo is refreshing. It cleanses your palate. Gives you something a little bit more grittier, realistic, or even more fantastic when you get into something like Sandman or Death. But it cleanses that palate cleans your palates of tights. Let's put it that way. Tights and capes. So
no tights, not too many tights and capes in Vertigo. So you'll be able to get that more. I think it's more grounded too. So.
It is. Yeah. I think that's a good way of, you know, for like I was saying, you're just getting, you know, if you are starting to feel that burnout from the superhero movies, this is still in the comic book world, but it's not those those over the top characters. All right.
To concur, sir.
So here we go. We're going into Legends.
Legends of the Long Box.
All right, folks. So Legends is our poll, our reads of the week. I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to put out there, out of the ones I've read this week, Reed Kitchen. That's my one. I've already stated my case. The jury's going to be out for it, but check out The Kitchen. They are out there. It's a good run. It's a good read. It's fun. It's different. And I think the artwork was great on it as well.
Definitely check that out. I think my pull list for the week is going to be one of the Vertigo titles that we mentioned. It's going to be Constantine. The title of this one is called Newcastle, A Taste of Things to Come. Now, if you've ever watched a television show or you've ever watched CW, there's always the mention in the background with Constantine of what happened at Newcastle. What happened at Newcastle? Well, this is definitely the run you want to start with. It shows you exactly what happened at Newcastle. Just a little background, no spoilers to it, but it's involving a very young John Constantine. So he's in a little bit of inexperience, and things go awry with a certain little girl, and I'll just leave it at that. It's one of his better runs. It's probably the best run that he's had. I mean, he's had some other ones, but it always includes like other people. But as far as like a solo run, this is the one that I really, really like, and it gets really, really dark. So my recommendation this week, Newcastle, A Taste of Things to Come with John Constantine.
And I second that one. That is definitely a good run, good one on that one. All right, folks.
And 100 bullets, too. I'm going to throw in 100 bullets.
Yeah, go right ahead. Knock yourself out. Yeah, we only wanted to do our polls for Vertigo, so that way, since that's what we talked about, but definitely the ones, because we did talk about a lot of different ones, but those are definitely the ones that we think that I think you'll enjoy the most. Constantine will get you into opening the door to other things. 100 bullets will as well, and I think for The Kitchen, it's a standalone. It's in its own pocket universe, so I don't think you won't take much, and you don't need much to read that and to really enjoy it. All right, well, that is it for... What's that?
I was going to say, are all those titles available on Comixology?
Yes, they are. I know. Right. I know The Kitchen is.
Okay, that's what I mean.
I'm pretty sure. Yeah, everything on Vertigo is still there. I did my check earlier this week because I was wanted to.
Yeah, I know some of those titles weren't available on Comixology. I just wanted to make sure because I'm going to download The Kitchen after we get done here.
I'm pretty sure I know The Kitchen is because they were doing a discount this week. Or 2 weeks ago with that. Actually, they're doing a big discount for Vertigo, period, on Comixology. So definitely look at that. I think they were doing that to tie in with the movie. But yeah, definitely check those out. I know, because I went in to try to check Fable because I wanted to pick up a couple of Fables. So, but guys, that is going to be the episode, our issue this week. Again, thank you for downloading, subscribing, and checking us out on our website for heroesasylum.com. Next week, D23. I'm gonna have to go find some mouse ears to do the show. So
I think we have a comment friend that has some mouse ears.
Yes,
or
yes.
Cat ears.
I think she has them both. that they're a card carrying member of the mouse club. So I'm sure there's something out there.
But, I'm sure she has some sort of despair.
Yes. But so yeah, we will we will have a full run of D23. I'm crossing my fingers. It's been so quiet lately. They have got to be storing up so much stuff. So I'm looking forward to a full packed issue next week.
It has to be. I mean, we've heard nothing since Comic-Con.
Yeah.
So I mean, they've been holding back.
This Obi-Wan, the price of Disney Plus and Hulu, that package thing, and I think of the Marvel thing, that was like it in like the last month. It's been so quiet. That's why I think some of those they were trying to prep.
Yeah, then if they were holding stuff back for D23, they definitely could have done a good job because I have heard nothing.
All right, so folks, like I said before, thank you for subscribing, downloading, checking us out on our website. That's what I was going to say. The website at heroesasylum.com. You can check out all of our issues for Heroes Asylum, also Midnight Movie Review, and a few more things to come. So, Kane, what do you got for us?
Oh yeah, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. Facebook is the main area of contact. We love to hear your thoughts and opinions and your comments. Get involved in the community there, especially. We have a lot of fun there. So lots of fun. I got a kick out of the stories people share. I got a kick out of the comments. And, you know, basically we're going to be there. We're going to get more involved with the Instagram page. It's going to be shame on me. I'd like to apologize. We're going to get more involved there and Twits and, you know, just give me and Captain Mike a holler if you have any, you know, maybe suggestions. Maybe you got a comic book you'd like to suggest to us. We'd definitely like to check out. So out of all that, get to the asylum.
That's right, folks. We will see you next week for D23 Heroes Asylum.